deep in the Swedish forest, the only individualist radio program in Europe. This is VSI Radio International. All the world hated you and believed you wicked, while your own conscience approved of you and absolved you from guilt, you would not be without friends. Finding new friends in the unlikeliest of corners, this is the voice of a sovereign individual. My name is Paul Lambert. Last week, we were introduced to a Swedish radio station that once broadcast for a short period in the early 1960s. The station was known as Radio Nord. Radio Nord was the brainchild of American radio magnate Gordon McLendon and the Finnish-born businessman Jack Kochak. At that time, one company had an exclusive license to broadcast and held the legal monopoly, Radio Sweden. Ostensibly created at arm's length as a public service independent of political and commercial influences, Radio Sweden was, in fact, the de facto government broadcaster and furthermore the mouthpiece of the ruling Swedish Social Democratic Workers' Party. Such being the case, Radio Nord was compelled to base its transmitting operation on board the Bonjour, a ship anchored in the Baltic Sea to the east of the Swedish mainland, just outside of territorial waters. The initial stages of the enterprise were arduous, as Radio Nord had to contend with numerous storms at sea, equipment failures, and the resulting delays in the work, which compelled the station to postpone its broadcast premiere. Furthermore, the radio enterprise had to stay abreast of the many technicalities involved in broadcasting on the Swedish market without running afoul of the law. While at the same time, the Swedish government enacted more and more measures to stifle the small station and bring its broadcast to a halt, measures that would even involve diplomatic improprieties and outright intimidation of the station's sponsors onshore.
Medan tyst i ton och ord kommer här Radio Nord. Lys, lys, lyssna.
In spite of all the obstacles, Radio Nord finally made its debut broadcast on the 8th of March 1961 to a highly receptive and appreciative Swedish public. Working for Radio Nord was certainly a very attractive prospect for many. As it looked from the outside, it must have seemed to be very glamorous, not least for young people with ambitions to become hosts. When those who were employed by the station were asked what it was like to work for Radio Nord, they resoundingly agreed that it was very exciting and that they had experiences that went far beyond anything else they had encountered in their professional careers. At the same time, it could also be rather tough and a troubled existence, and it was vital that one fit in and took a liking to the situation. As an employer, Jack Kochak was often described as having abruptly changeable moods. Without a doubt, Kochak came into strong-willed people every day who, on just about any terms at all, would have loved to have joined the staff of such a celebrity company. Kochak listened constantly to how his station sounded. He compared his broadcast to that of the newly started Melody Radio, which he strove at all times to surpass in order to hold on to his audience, and thus the confidence of the sponsors. In August 1961, Kochak received a letter from his American business partner, Gordon McLendon. In that letter, McClendon warned Kochak that the financier behind the Radio Nord enterprise, a man by the name of Bob Thompson, was already beginning to lose patience, and the project was at risk of running out of funds. Thompson did not invest in Radio Nord simply for the fun of it, and if the risks involved were too great, he might just pull out and shut the operation down. In his letter to Kochak, McClendon told him that they needed to regain Thompson's confidence, and they needed to get him into a better mood with regard to the future prospects for the station. It cannot have been easy for Kochak to explain problems as being attributable to the political obstacles that Penn had put in his way, thanks to the Swedish government. To an American of the early 1960s, not familiar with the damage that can be done by the political maneuverings of the government of a second-rate democracy, the McClendon business formula simply had to be as successful in Sweden as it was in the United States. If not, it would simply mean that the job was not being done properly. Indeed, for some time by then, demands were made that the Radio Nord project needed to start making returns. Even before such demands were made expressly, two journalists were suddenly terminated from their positions, News Bureau Chief Bjorn Fredrik Heyer and Seve Ungermark, whom we met last week. It was rather all of a sudden, and no real reason behind the dismissals ever really came forth, in spite of a few rather terse discussions. Neither their professional skill nor their suitability as disc jockeys ever came into question. It really seemed that Kochak's short fuse and the pressures put on him by his American financier were the only reasons for the rash decision on his part. In his memos to the staff, Kochak's growing frustration became more and more apparent. In October 1961, the on-air personalities were ordered quickly to learn how to run the control room equipment on their own. Of course, this meant that the technicians employed ran the risk of being made redundant if the program host could broadcast their respective programs without the help of the technicians. It was a matter of rationalization, or what we might call downsizing these days. Even before Radio Nord officially hit the airwaves, it was clear that some staff members would be needed at first, who would eventually be let go once the necessary routines at the station had set in. By 1962, technical problems concerning the ship itself had finally been overcome. The Bonjour was already a 40-year-old vessel by then, but in its refurbishment into a broadcast ship, every little detail had been overhauled so that it might as well have been a brand new ship. After all the problems it suffered in the beginning, the Bonjour had run perfectly for the past 6 months with regard to operational reliability. The broadcasts had a good range of coverage. No domestic Swedish radio station with the same transmitting power had a comparable coverage area, and in fact, none had as good a sound quality, albeit on medium wave. With one notable exception, due to a February storm and a resulting generator problem, Radio Nord was in constant working order and was continuously on the air 24 hours a day.
Det här programmet ikväll omfattar en redovisning av de erfarenheter som hittills gjorts av radioreklam under de mycket speciella betingelser som vi alla känner väl till.
Toward the end of January 1962, the Swedish Market Research Institute, IMU, conducted a listener survey for Radio Nord. The results of the survey were presented in connection with a debate held in Stockholm on the very topic of radio advertising. The survey showed that Radio Nord had 800,000 listeners, which was far lower than the figure Kochak expected to hear. At the same time, Kochak received stern orders from Dallas to make budget cuts, and he was given demands that the several million-dollar investment needed to pay off. Naturally, the situation was also affected by the dire future legal and political entanglements that he knew were in the works.
Eller de metoder som statsmakterna, framförallt i Sverige och Danmark, vidtagit eller planerar att vidta för att omöjliggöra piratsändarna eller frihetssändarna, vilket man nu vill.
The newspapers reported the first staff cutbacks on the 9th of February. Hit hardest was Lennart Atterling. He had been a program manager since the autumn of 1961, following Ron Baxley, who in the summer of 1961 held the post and modified the station's selection according to the successful McClendon pattern. What more we know about Ron Baxley is that he was, and remained, a star status radio DJ. But when he left Sweden, after being fired by Kochak, he did not have much positive to say about this little country. As it turns out, Kochak always felt that he had been forced to take on Baxley following a lengthy, persuasive discussion with McLendon. When it became apparent that Ron's changes resulted in a lower number of listeners, this confirmed what Kochak had thought all along, and he fired Baxley on the spot and put Atcheling in his place. After a while, a new listener survey was conducted which showed that figures were still poor. Atcheling was transferred from his position as quickly as Baxley was fired, and then Kochak himself took over the role as program manager. When Atcheling received the message that his hitherto received high salary was to be cut in accordance with his demoted position, he chose instead to resign. The 1st of February, 1962, must have been the tensest day ever, given the flood of memos that Kochak sent around to the staff. Ever since the preceding autumn, Kochak had gradually become harsher and harsher in his tone, and he wanted the program hosts to learn how to operate the equipment on their own. Such a manner of working was very new in Sweden, but Kochak noticed that the programs took on a more natural feel whenever the DJs took charge of the technical matters. Nevertheless, one can read in the memos that Kochak noticed a great number of difficulties and sensed a lack of goodwill on the part of certain members of staff in adopting this working procedure. Radio Nord employed a staff of journalists who naturally were acquainted with others in the mass media, and the news of the dramatic changes within Radio Nord quickly showed up in the headlines of the daily papers. Readers read articles about how Kochak would air out his profound disappointment in that some of his staff did not want to work aboard the Bonjour, but rather preferred the more comfortable existence at the Stockholm studios. Still, there were at least a few presenters at Radio Nord that Kochak valued too highly to compel them out onto the Bonjour. One of them was Larsen Sørensen.
Och det var Happy José, eller Ching Ching då, nionde placerad med Jack Ross, belönad med 566 poäng. Vad har du i håret? Vita brill såklart. Och vad har du i håret?
Larsson Sørensen had a funny and fresh style about him that was well suited to more pop contexts, not least as the presenter of the Top 20 music program. His background was in sports journalism, and he covered such events as the 1948 Olympics. But at Radio Nord, he was a disc jockey who successfully learned how to operate the technical equipment himself, even if he did describe himself as a technical idiot. In addition to the DJing, Sørensen had a highly cultural streak to him, and on many occasions he took the opportunity to hold interviews, in particular with his great artistic inspiration, Carl Gerhardt. Following his period with Radio Nord, he was employed at the Gunther & Beck advertising agency as a copywriter. He was married late in 1962 and had a daughter. Sadly, he began to fade away into obscurity once he was diagnosed with a brain tumor in the mid-1960s, an illness that would plague him the rest of his short life. Larsen Sørensen died in 1970 at the age of 38. Another one of Kochak's favorites was Gert Landin, the voice most closely associated with Radio Nord as such, and one of the first to be hired by Radio Nord in 1960. He remained right until the very end.
God afternoon. afton alla hemtrevliga människor. Här är Gert Landin med Radio Nords kvällsprogram. Ja, så är då den här påsken så gott som över.
He made his radio debut at the age of 20 for the Swedish radio service, with his involvement in a program targeted toward youth. He later took on a more serious role in 1950 when he traveled to London to head up the Swedish language section for the BBC World Service. His time there impressed the BBC spirit upon him that showed through during his years as a radio announcer, with his uniquely good speaking voice and mastery both of the Swedish and English languages.
Trots allt hos alla människor en viss längtan ut till naturen. Och om man tänker sig den här sommarstugan som kan vara både primitiv och enkel på många sätt, så är den ändå på något vis mer tilltalande än de funktionalistiska skräckfantasier som vi fick oss till livs i den här franska filmen Mon Oncle, om ni kommer ihåg.
His association with pirate radio was no obstacle to his continued career. Right after Radio Nord eventually shut down, he quickly found freelance work with Radio Sweden, and he even spent some time as a TV news anchor, though he always felt best on radio and took several different jobs and roles in that field. The program for which Landin is best remembered is naturally the Top 20. The program was clearly taken from an American example. Radio Nord's Top 20 became the most authoritative hit list in the country, and no record store would be without the Top 20 poster, which clearly listed the updated rankings of all the hit songs. The Top 20 program played all the songs, starting from number 20, all the way up to the number one hit of the day. Between approximately every two or three songs, a commercial advertisement was aired for whatever company sponsored the program that week. At times, the program featured interviews with guest artists. The unholy alliance against private radio harbored drastic fears about Radio Nord. An investigation conducted by the Swedish Trade Union Confederation concluded that Radio Nord had to be stopped as soon as possible, as the station could become a threat to national security if the programs were to become politicized and filled with propaganda. They disregarded the very clear and strict policy set by Radio Nord that it avoid all forms of ideology, be it political, religious, or otherwise. The station was for entertainment and information only. Yet even then, let's say that Radio Nord or any other offshore broadcaster that might take to the airwaves decided to broadcast political messages. Is the free exchange of ideas really a threat to a free nation? Or did the Trade Union Confederation unwittingly let a cat out of the bag as to how precarious their stupid socialist pipe dreams were, and remain to this day, in the face of rational argument and among a populace finally given a chance to hear a differing point of view? But I digress. Another fantasy contrived was that the specific compilation of music selections in Radio Nord's program contained some kind of secret code used for espionage purposes. So hated was Radio Nord by the Social Democratic Workers' Party that it was so desperate to find any conceivable reason to be rid of the station. Although, in fairness, the Social Democrats were not alone in their desire to get Radio Nord off the air, the Swedish Centrist Party stood 100% behind the government in its efforts, and even in some respects was the motive force behind such drives. Centrist Party member Rune Gustafsson stated on 9 May 1961 in the Parliament that the government should take harsher measures against the pirates than simply starting its own gossip radio, referring to Melody Radio. On the 21st of May 1962, the Centrist Party caucus issued a statement that in no uncertain terms the pirate broadcasts must be stopped. In a surprising instance of advocacy, the Swedish paper Expressen essentially headed a campaign in support of Radio Nord every day in April 1962. On the 29th of April, it published the results of a simplified poll in which readers were asked what they thought of the upcoming law against pirate radio and of Radio Nord itself. More than 200,000 votes were received, and more than 99% of the votes cast wanted Radio Nord to remain on the air. Radio Nord was very big on listener participation and arranged many listener contests and competitions. One such contest that received particular attention was held by Radio Nord and the newly found Guldfund jewelry store, in which a diamond ring was frozen into a 1 cubic meter large block of ice. Then the ice was placed at a wharf. The object of the game was to guess the date and exact time that the block of ice would have melted to the point that the diamond ring could be freed. This contest attracted so much attention that the police were called to the scene, and the ice block had to be moved to another location as there was a risk of people drowning if they were shoved off the wharf some 30 feet away. Radio Nord then moved a block of ice to a location far from the shore, but then once more moved the block to a private lot where it would remain undisturbed for the remainder of the contest. A young girl won the beautiful diamond ring. Yet another contest involved contestants identifying 6 mystery voices heard in somewhat unusual contexts. For instance, one singer named Eberhard Julabo sung the song April in Paris, which was far removed from the style of music for which he was known. The competition was won by a woman who was given 10,000 Swedish crowns, which in terms of today's money was equivalent to about $20,000. This turned out to be a well-timed blessing, as her husband had been on sick leave for a very long time and they had 6 children to support. Tuned to VSI Radio International. To contact the program, please send an email to feedback@vsiradio.org. That's feedback@victorsierraindiaradio.org. My name is Paul Lambert. The government's proposed law against offshore radio, the so-called Lex Radio Nord, was submitted to the Swedish Legislative Council. Now, the Legislative Council is a body composed of Supreme Court justices, both practicing and retired. Their job is to conduct what is known in legal parlance as a judicial preview, or an abstract legal review. What this means is that the task of the Legislative Council is to pronounce the legal validity of any proposed piece of legislation that the government may submit to it for such a review. Now, Sweden being the second-rate democracy that it is, with a laughably deficient constitution, the government is not required to abide by the Legislative Council, nor to take its decision into account. Nevertheless, the government is required to get the opinion of the Legislative Council prior to passing any law affecting freedom of expression. The Legislative Council examines a newly proposed law to ensure that it does not contravene any existing law, that it is not in conflict with the Constitution in any way, and that it is legally unassailable. A statement was issued by the Legislative Council 3 weeks later. The proposed law was considered dubious at best, as Radio Nord did not interfere with any radio broadcasts in Sweden, and its programs were not harmful in any way, and since the matter was going to be addressed a few months later in the European Council, the Legislative Council felt that, according to the Constitution, any such proposed law should at least wait and be postponed. Behind the examination of Lex Radio Nord was Legislative Council member Ingrid Gerda Widemar. She motioned for the entire proposed law to be defeated. She did not feel that Sweden was in any way obliged to pass such a law. Her impression was that the law was solely intended to uphold the monopoly position for one certain company, Radio Sweden. In her words, "The law punishes a series of actions that have hitherto been considered completely normal. Advertising on such a free radio transmitter is not considered to be a criminal activity, and our country's judicial system does not benefit from such legislation." Neither did Stig Jägerskiöld, professor in international law, find that Sweden was obliged to enact the legislation in question, and indeed found that such legislation would breach the legal rights of the Swedish people. The government had tried to get support from prominent legal theorists that there was an obligation for Sweden to enact such legislation pursuant to international law, but this attempt had failed miserably. Nevertheless, the government decided not to take any of the expert statements into account, neither from the professor nor from the Legislative Council. While there is no constitutional requirement for the government to do so, the government almost always follows the decisions of the Legislative Council. So that it did not do so in this case was highly unusual. On the 27th of April, the following proposition, number 171, was submitted to Parliament. The so-called Pirate Radio Law of 1962, Lex Radio Nord, in summary. 1. He who upon the open sea or in the airspace above it makes use of radio equipment for broadcasting shall be punished by fines or imprisonment if such broadcasting can interfere or obstruct radio reception in Sweden, Denmark, Finland, or Norway. 2. He who offers technical or financial aid to the operation of the radio facility, carries out transportation to the ship or to the location from which the broadcasts are made, or undertakes or conveys errands for the broadcast, shall be punished as accomplices to the crime. The text in Section 2, which criminalized transportation to and from the broadcasting vessel, was what would eventually bring Radio Nord to a decisive halt. Without that one detail, the legislation in itself would have been rather meaningless. However, there was a weakness in Section 1 with regard to interference of radio reception. This loophole would give another station, Radio Syd, or Radio South, the break it needed, and Radio Syd claimed that its broadcasts in no way obstructed or interfered with any radio reception, as Radio Syd used a frequency that no other transmitter within a reasonable distance did. Radio Syd therefore continued its broadcasts after the law came into effect and until 1966, when yet another completely new law came into effect under the pen of a man who would eventually become Prime Minister, Olof Palme. The 1966 Pirate Radio Law, courtesy of Palme, read as follows. 1. He who conducts radio broadcasting from radio facilities on the open sea or in the airspace above it shall be sentenced to pay fines or to imprisonment of a maximum of 1 year, if the transmission is intended to be received or can be received in Sweden. 2. He who commits the following acts shall be punished as accomplices. He who extends to the owner or user of the transmitter technical or financial assistance, provides equipment or provisions for the undertaking, carries out transportation to or from ships, aircraft, or other vehicle on which the facility is present, or provides a means of such transportation, participates in the broadcast, produces programs or other materials intended to be used in the broadcast, submits or conveys materials to be broadcast, provides advertising for the undertaking, or engages in a business intended in any other way to promote such an undertaking. Through this new writing of the law, the loophole, of which Radio Sud took advantage, was closed. Other factors were certainly involved in the decision to shut down Radio Sud, but the new law was likely the proverbial nail in the coffin. Back to 1962, a parliamentary debate was held on the 28th of May, the final day of the spring parliamentary session before the summer recess. The opinions were largely divided along party lines. On the one side there was the bourgeois bloc, consisting of representatives of the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party. It must be stated quite frankly that most parliamentarians in the bourgeois bloc were as inclined to legislate Radio Nord out of existence as anyone else in the government. Their only objection was that it was all being done in such a rush. They felt that Sweden could wait for an expected pan-Nordic action to take place, and they referred to what the Legislative Council pointed out, in that the European Council was already dealing with the issue. The debate centered around two extremely controversial issues. Not only did it concern the easing of the radio monopoly, but even more controversial was the notion of allowing commercial advertisements on radio and television. Both notions were utterly unthinkable in the socialist bloc, but even more so in the centrist party. Moreover, even certain voices within the bourgeois bloc had a hard time with such notions. Gunnar Helén would later accept his nomination to become leader of the Liberal Party, on the condition that under his leadership, the party would not put forth the question of allowing advertising on TV and radio. In this debate, however, Helén championed a quick legislation against pirate broadcasters. His rationale was that such a prohibition was needed for security reasons. The tense situation in the world meant that the competing superpowers had an interest in broadcasting propaganda. The most freedom-oriented party program in 1962 consisted of an idea that religious and non-profit organizations should be allowed to broadcast their own programs. 17 years later, this was to materialize in the form of local radio. The obstinate position of the political parties against allowing radio and TV advertising was based on their desire to protect their own party's newspapers from having to compete for advertising revenues. Such obstinacy remained well into the 1980s in spite of two independent research projects demonstrating that radio and TV advertising only had a marginal effect on newspaper and advertising revenues. Both those studies were dismissed, and the government ordered yet another study, this time with the express purpose of finding that advertising on electronic media indeed did have such a detrimental effect on newspaper revenues. Even this third, weighted and biased research could not produce any evidence to support the foregone conclusion it was commissioned to find. Of course, the results of these three independent surveys were silenced in the press. The party that had always been most positively inclined toward advertising on radio and TV was the Conservative Party. However, for them, the issue was considered in the light of simply making the radio and TV monopoly less expensive to maintain. The Conservative Party's election platform in 1962 stated that the radio pirates should not be legislated out of existence, but rather be competed out of existence by allowing commercial advertisements on Radio Sweden. As they understood it, they thought it was the advertisements in and of themselves that attracted listeners to Radio Nord. The Conservatives were only interested in reducing Radio Sweden's hunger for grants of money by partially financing it through advertising. Lifting the monopoly was another, less interesting issue. However, during the debate, one Conservative parliamentarian, Leif Cassel, was alone in putting forth the bold idea that Radio Nord should be allowed to move its transmitters onshore and to be assigned a legal frequency. Of course, the Parliament was not about to entertain such an outlandish idea. If I may digress for a moment, the Swedish Conservative Party and European conservatism in general offers us once more living proof that you cannot fight against bad ideas without fighting for good ideas, and why principles are so important. Ideas matter. In the face of the socialist move to criminalize offshore radio, the Conservatives only counter with, not so quickly. In the face of the socialist desire to legislate Radio Nord out of existence, the Conservatives only counter with, no, let's compete them out of existence. In response to the socialist defense of the radio monopoly, the Conservatives simply counter with, let's make the monopoly less expensive to maintain. These are not principled stances. You cannot fight against something unless you fight for something. It should be no surprise that, with few exceptions, such as the current moment, the Social Democratic Workers' Party has ruled Sweden for more than a century straight. The opposition bourgeois parties had for decades prior to the Radio Nord affair consistently failed to stand out as a credible alternative government. Sweden was becoming more and more of a single-party state, even if officially it was a democracy. The constant failing of the bourgeois bloc reached a particular low in that the centrist party was unwilling in all political issues to indicate just what they wanted. Their party's business concept was, and is still, to straddle the fence between the Social Democrats and the bourgeois bloc, and then attract undecided voters from both camps by offering the faintest clue on their politics. So then that was the bourgeois bloc and how it handled the Radio Nord issue. On the other side, we had the socialist bloc, who felt it was urgent to act right away in order to get the desired result. Communications Minister Gösta Skoglund referred to newspaper reports that told of other pirate companies that were about to take to the airwaves and that the government dare not wait to take action. The Social Democratic Workers' Party had a majority in Parliament to ensure that the law would pass, primarily through the support of the centrist party and, of course, through the Communist Party. The debate in Parliament was fierce and continued late into the night, but of course the entire time the coming result of the debate was a foregone conclusion. At midnight, a clear majority voted for the government's new law, 83-4 versus 45 against in the lower house, and 134-4 versus 73 against in the upper house. It had been Communications Minister Gösta Skoglund who had made the Radio Nord affair into such a pressing matter for the government. The issue had dominated the agenda for 3 years, and this resulted in other important government business being woefully neglected, even in matters concerning national security and the infiltration of foreign powers. Nevertheless, during the pirate radio debate in the Swedish Parliament, Skoglund tried to play the wounded innocent party. He moralized over others in Parliament, claiming that it was they that made a mountain out of a molehill. He said, "This had been such a minor issue. It was a question about what we could do to generate respect or not. The issue should not have provoked any discussion. I'm only sad that there are those out there who wanted to turn the matter into a political issue and try to take advantage. I find the handling of this matter bizarre, given that it was only about a mere matter of fact." At that time, Olof Palme was still a rather unknown personality among the Swedish public, but as early as 1954, he was already being groomed by Prime Minister Tage Erlander. However, as an apprentice, Palme already proved to be very self-sufficient. He was voted into Parliament as a Social Democrat in 1958, and by 1961, he advanced to the position of division head for the cabinet. He was the brain who served behind the intellectually deficient Skoglund in forming the pirate radio law. In 1965, Palme took over from Skoglund in dealing with such radio issues, and in time he would formulate even stricter rules in this regard. Palme's main aim was first and foremost to prevent the introduction of advertising on radio and TV. According to Palme himself, he said, quote, "I would in all humility state the best years of my life of service to the public were those in which I spent combating the notion of the commercialization of Swedish radio and television." In spite of Radio Nord dominating the government agenda for 3 years, nowhere is Radio Nord or Jack Kocak mentioned in the former Prime Minister Tage Erlander's memoirs, not even in those that focus on the early 1960s. Perhaps in retrospect, Erlander found good reason to keep silent about his well-deserved shame. An IMU survey conducted immediately before the anti-pirate radio law was passed indicated overwhelming support for Radio Nord among radio listeners. 78% of those asked were against the new law. However, a majority of parliamentarians voted in favor of it. It really puts into question the very notion of elected, quote, representatives who do not represent the views of their constituents at all. Instead, that a government, contrary to the findings of its own legislative council, in spite of 3 independent investigations that found private radio not to be a threat to the newspaper industry, and in spite of championing liberal democratic values such as freedom of expression and the dignity of man, would pass a law to stifle a perfectly peaceful and honest undertaking that clearly was wanted by the population and which enhanced the country's culture and improved its standard of living, only demonstrated just what the arrogant men in government truly thought of the people of Sweden. At midnight on the 30th of June 1962, broadcasts came to an end after nearly 16 months. The broadcasts of the day were transmitted as normal, and the staff tried to refrain from the emotionality that set in. However, to some extent, there was a little bit of ironic humor considering what that day would entail, including a few pokes at Skoglund and Rydbeck and the other enemies of free radio. The 3-man team that was responsible for the final night of broadcasting were Kai Hager, Sten Hedman, and technician Kenneth Agahed. Agahed had just joined Radio Nord a few months earlier, and while he may have lacked experience, he certainly proved himself capable with his beautiful music-mixing techniques.
Adieu.
At the end of the night, it was finally time to switch off. However, the throwing of this switch would not merely mark the end of a broadcast, but the end of an entire company, an enterprise that had meant so much to so many.
de lagstiftande myndigheterna får låna Monica Zetterlunds röst.
Stick i myggan, kom aldrig hit igen.
The last song played was a recording of music star Monica Zetterlund singing a Swedish translation of Hit the Road Jack, which was followed by a medley of Radio Nord jingles, and then silence. The transmitter was off.
Tio, nio, åtta, sju, sex, fem, fyra, tre, två, ett.
After so many years, today it's hard to understand how such a harmless phenomenon as Radio Nord could have been a top priority of the government at the time. The arguments in support of the law were all based on evasions and false pretexts. Erlander, Skoglund, and later Olof Palme all blamed technical reasons, such as congestion on the airwaves, and even tried to blame pressure from other countries, namely that they were required to abide by the International Telecommunications Union. Of course, those were all just lies. In addressing this matter, Radio Sweden, the Swedish Communications Board, and the Ministry of Communications all worked so closely together that it seemed like they were all departments of the same institution with an interest in the matter. In part, this was about a fear of losing prestige. Radio Sweden also feared that competition would lead to artists' royalties shooting through the roof if artists could negotiate and choose more than one program company. But mostly they feared that competition would result in lower listening ratings and, as a result, increase the risk of the system of licensing fees coming into the question. Why pay a license fee to Radio Sweden when no one listens to it? Well, in spite of the government's assault on the dignity of the Swedish people and in its abject ignoring of popular opinion in the Radio Nord issue, the outrage did not reflect in the election polls of 1962, when Erlander, Skoglund, Palme, and the rest of the Social Democratic gang was re-elected, in accordance with the democratic will of the Swedish electorate. Go figure. While this was the end of the story for Radio Nord, the Bonjour still had quite some adventures ahead in the world of pirate radio, although the ship would be rechristened a few times, the Magda Maria, for example, from which Wonderful Radio London would broadcast off the English coast. Later, the Magda Maria, erstwhile Bonjour, made its way to Spain, where it was renamed the Mi Amigo, and then set course for Dover as Radio Atlanta's broadcast ship. On the 26th of January 1963, the Mi Amigo, erstwhile Magda Maria, erstwhile Bonjour, crossed the Atlantic and made its way to Galveston, Texas, arriving on the 9th of March. The plan was to convert her into a luxury yacht. All the radio equipment was removed, but after a series of complicated business deals, the ship was moved 9 months later back across the Atlantic and arrived on 30 January 1964 to the El Ferrol shipyard, where it was renovated in order to accommodate a larger mast in the future. On the 3rd of March, refurbishments were completed and the ship headed to Greenmore, Ireland, where it was fitted with a 43-meter tall mast. The boat would eventually come home to the famous Radio Caroline. The story from that point onward is already familiar to many long-time shortwave listeners. You're listening to VSI Radio International. If you'd like to contact VSI, please send an email to feedback@vsiradio.org. That's feedback@victorsierraindiaradio.org. VSI Radio International is produced in Sweden, exclusively for broadcast on WBCQ, transmitting from Monticello, Maine, USA, on 7,490 kHz. My name is Paul Lambert. Again, special thanks to Ingemar Lindqvist for having compiled all the information you heard tonight on this special documentary program, including the sound clips. Of course, this broadcast tonight has only touched the surface of this fascinating story. I encourage all those interested to visit Ingemar Lindqvist's webpage, which presents the story in much more detail and which offers full-length sound clips, including the entire broadcasts of the Ingo Patterson boxing match on Radio Luxembourg, and the entire inaugural broadcast of Radio Nord, and much, much more. His radio web pages are available both in Swedish and in English. To get to his page, go to radiohistoria.jvnf.org/eng.htm. That is, listen carefully, radiohistoria.jvnf.org/eng.htm. That will take you right to the English language page. If you did not get that, simply write to me at feedback@vsiradio.org and I'll be happy to send you the link. Thank you for joining me this week, and I hope you'll tune in again next Saturday for another episode of VSI Radio International. More pirate radio specials to follow immediately. Please stay tuned for the continuation of Alan Wiener's historic pirate radio special.
If you've enjoyed this presentation, visit www.justrightmedia.org for more programming that's not right-wing, it's just right.